Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Well, I am thrilled to have two guests with me today who are doing amazing work in their respective fields. Both of them are going to talk about the missing piece of the puzzle that they found in their respective fields. My second guest today says that while the medical profession at large refuses to acknowledge it, you can be addicted to certain foods. Dr. Vera Tarman is the author of Food Junkies, The Truth About Food Addiction. People, she says, can get addicted to sugar and flour, eventually becoming as sick and depressed as any alcoholic or drug addict. We'll talk to her around 12:35 and we'll explore the science behind food's enticing mood-altering effects and how that's creating neuropathways in our brain. But first, I'm very pleased to welcome psychotherapist Susan Anderson. She's the author of Taming Your Outer Child, as well as The Journey from Abandonment to Healing. She's the founder of the Outer Child and Abandonment Recovery Movements and has devoted the past 30 years of clinical experience and research to helping people resolve abandonment and overcome self-sabotage. And her website is outerchild.net, and she has a ton of great information up there. The book we're talking about today is Taming Your Outer Child, Overcoming Self-Sabotage and Healing from Abandonment. Susan Anderson, welcome.
I'm happy to be here, Vicki.
Well, we're very happy to have you here. And I should say you are a psychotherapist, the founder of the Abandonment Recovery Movement. Tell me a little bit how you got started working in abandonment with abandonment issues.
Well, as a psychotherapist, I always saw things through the lens of abandonment. So I had always sort of specialized in looking at things through that perspective. And suddenly the love of my life, my 18-year marital partner, up and left me for another woman, and I was devastated from the abandonment and realized that what I had learned about healing abandonment amounted to a baby aspirin for a migraine headache, and that, you know, in order for me to really make a full recovery, I had to do a lot of research to find better tools because the ones that I was using were too lukewarm. So that's what got me started on a whole new discovery process, a new journey, and a lot of new tools.
So I want to just define some language that we're going to use throughout the course of this conversation, so our listeners are on the same page with us. You know, you say that as humans, we all have primal abandonment fear. And I spent the day with friends and I asked them, do you feel you have an abandonment fear? And they said, no. But then as the day went on, one said, you know, I think I do have a fear around this. And then somebody else said, you know, I think I have abandonment issues around this. So they can be very far reaching and very different issues. So what do we mean by abandonment issues?
Well, abandonment is that feeling of being left behind, being left on the doorstep. And it can happen when we're excluded from a party, or when we fail to get recognition, or when we just sort of have a lonely afternoon and feel that we don't have any real deep connection with anyone. Some people have that experience, and others have more of a vulnerability inside their relationships where they feel dismissed by something that a friend says. But when you have an actual, when you're fired from a job or rejected in a relationship, there's suddenly this huge reaction, this huge biophysiological reaction that you feel that you're going to collapse. It just takes the rug right from underneath you, and you wonder, where did such powerful emotion come from? And that's where it comes from. It's from that primal abandonment fear that actually we all share, and it's not always manifest. It's very often quiet unless something triggers it.
Right. And it's important for us to recognize these. You use a quote in the book by Joseph Ledoux, who says fear tends to incubate over time rather than dissipate.
Yeah. Yes, because when we avoid taking care of something or avoid facing a challenge because it's difficult, it, instead of the fear getting less, it gets greater. So that if we tend to be, I'm just making an example here, but let's say we tend to be shy about finding a new relationship, we may avoid it. We may sort of isolate and just kind of avoid the whole issue.
Right,
because
right.
Because we wait until we feel a little bit stronger. We wait until we feel less insecure. But the problem is, the longer we postpone it, the more fear we develop. The longer we wait to go in and tell our boss that we want to be recognized, that we're ready for the next level and we're ready to move forward and take a raise or something of that sort, the longer we wait to assert ourselves, the more afraid we get. That we tend to wait until a moment, and in waiting and in procrastinating and avoiding, the fear increases. And this is something that has been, you know, demonstrated in all kinds of scientific experiments, that right. fear actually incubates.
Right, right. So let's talk about the outer child then. I think many of us have heard of the inner child. And, you know, I have to say, I do believe your outer child is the missing link myself, because, you know, like many people, I read about the inner child and I thought, okay, I can definitely understand where they're coming from on that. But it felt a little too touchy-feely for me without any real resolution. And I think you found the resolution here with the outer child. So tell us what you mean by outer child and how that is different from the inner child.
Well, the outer child is the part that acts out your inner child's feelings in inappropriate ways. So your outer child is the part that breaks your diet and is attracted to all the wrong people and runs up your credit card. In fact, your second guest will speak to the kind of food addiction and the biophysiological reason behind it that outer child can easily get into, because outer child is the addict of the personality. So the way inner child plays in, so you have a feeling, let's say, that you're tense and eating some, you know, a gallon of ice cream, all that sugar will kind of act like a tranquilizer and kind of make you feel logy and reduce your tension. And so outer child will take that feeling of being tense or sad or empty and will act it out in a way that actually sabotages your goal. Your goal may be to stay trim and fit and healthy and slim, and there's your outer child eating a gallon of ice cream because it wants pleasure or tension reduction.
Right. And you say that being able to separate the personality in this way, we're not heading towards schizophrenia, but it's an important first step toward controlling our actions and emotional destiny.
It is, because by creating sort of an arbitrary multiple personality, you're dividing your personality into three parts. You're having an adult self and an inner child, that's the emotional part, the innocent, just feelings and needs. And then you have an outer child, which is the acting out part that acts out all your feelings in patterns, in self-sabotaging patterns. You have three parts, an adult, an inner child, and an outer child. And by teasing apart these aspects of the personality, by exaggerating in your mind, using your imagination, exaggerating the distance, the difference between them, you can really see the mechanism that's
yes.
at play on an everyday basis, that your adult self has a goal and has every intention of handling a situation in a mature manner. Your inner child has a feeling, maybe fear, maybe anger. Your outer child swoops in and decides to overreact and tell everyone off and bring up the past and make a mess of the communication that your adult self had planned in a very mature manner. So these three parts of the personality are very often out of balance, and we have exercises that help to bring them back into balance so that your adult self can you know, step up to the plate and call the shots and get the job done properly.
Right. And the book, the way you've laid it out, you know, once we understand these three parts to the personality, you say that we'll build new neural pathways, which we know get stronger the more we use them. So understanding this and understanding the outer child in particular is pretty critical to stopping this self-sabotage that we get involved with.
It's very important to get to know your outer child. We all have one. It's the obstinate, self-centered part all of us share. And it's the knee-jerk reaction part that contains our defense mechanisms. And it's very important to get to know your outer child. But the program itself begins with that kind of insight, which is a real personal inventory taking. But then it becomes a doing program. You don't think your way out of self-sabotage. You do your way out. And doing means baby steps. It means incrementally building toward your goals. Of course, you don't do this just by waking up in the morning and deciding to become constructive in your daily activities. There's a program you can follow that actually helps you take daily baby steps, action steps that reprogram your behavioral patterns, which is another way of saying reprogramming the brain. Since when you develop a habit, it becomes, you know, embedded within the brain.
Right. So I think this is a great tool to help us. I want to talk a little bit more about self-sabotage and how it's looking for instant gratification and all that stuff. But we need to take a very quick break first. And then when we come back, I want to also look at how we can do a self-inventory and start turning around the areas where we do sabotage ourselves. My guest is Susan Anderson. She's a psychotherapist. Her new book is called Taming Your Outer Child, Overcoming Self-Sabotage and Healing from Abandonment. And you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Please do stay with us.
Get brighter. Ooh, child, things are gonna get easier. Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, Sasha Martin's one goal when she set out to write Life from Scratch was to chronicle her adventure of eating a meal from every country in the world with her picky husband and baby girl. Vicky also talks with CNN anchor Nicole Lappin, who says if you're working, paying bills, and shopping, you're a CEO of your own financial department, and her new book empowers you to take control of your life. Keep up with show news on Facebook and Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and be sure and tune in every Monday at noon.
If you'd like to advertise your business or service on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, or you'd like to become a program supporter by sponsoring one of our shows, please call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine a spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772 or email info@conversationslive.net. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Talk radio to help you heal and stay healthy.
For the people, by the people. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Ooh, child, things are gonna be easier. Ooh, child, things will be brighter.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and we are talking about our outer child today. I shared a story in the break with Susan Anderson. I just said that, you know, I had an out-of-child experience myself this weekend. And I couldn't understand why I was feeling so agitated and irritated about something that was really quite inconsequential. And then I was like, you know what? After I'd read the book, it's my outer child. It really was my outer child acting up. So I'm talking with psychotherapist Susan Anderson. She's the author of Taming Your Outer Child, as well as The Journey from Abandonment to Healing. She's doing amazing work in this area. And I wanted to talk, Susan, if we can, about a little bit more about self-sabotage and how it's caused by self-abandonment. We stop acting in our, you know, we can have all this knowledge and understand, you know, some of us might be able to write a book on nutrition, or we might be able to, you know, write a business book about certain things, and but don't follow through with it. And you say that the outer child is always looking for instant gratification, and self-sabotage is caused by self-abandonment. So I wonder if you'd talk around that for me, please.
Yes, self-abandonment is really what adult abandonment is all about, because as adults, we're really too old to be abandoned. We can feel abandoned easily, but it can be triggered, as I described before, just by having a friend not return a phone call or not being recognized at work. It can be very easily triggered. But throughout life, we have experienced these little slings and arrows of living, little moments of rejection, and it accumulates into an abandonment wound. And each time we feel that somehow we weren't good enough, or we our personality didn't stand out enough, or we didn't count, we weren't enough, we somehow develop some self-doubt and move a little bit further away from ourselves. We become angry with ourselves or doubting in ourselves, and we abandon ourselves. So in adulthood, the way this manifests is that we love ourselves, but not enough to give ourselves what we really want, only enough to give ourselves the cheap thrill stuff. So let's say it's Saturday afternoon, and the adult self wants to get the whole house organized, clean out the closet, get the garage organized. Right. Come on, let's get this mess cleaned up, you know. And the outer child says, oh, yeah, but you know what would be even nicer? Would be just to lie around watching television. So let's do that instead. So you love yourself enough to give yourself indulgences over shopping at the mall, having a third glass of wine, talking about a friend behind their back, you know, but not enough to take the steps that would actually give you an achieved goal that would really feel good. People who really love themselves give themselves what they really want. If you are going on a sugar-free time in order to cleanse your system and really eat healthy, you're giving yourself what's good for you. You're taking the actual steps, and it's tough to give up sugar because, you know, it's very, very addictive and delicious. But you're giving yourself a gift by doing that. But if you only love yourself a little bit, you've abandoned yourself so much that you'll give yourself a cheap thrill, you know, you'll succumb. You'll succumb to the second piece of cake.
Right.
So it is the self-abandonment is the root of self-sabotage. And the antidote is to adopt yourself, to reverse the self-abandonment by adopting yourself, taking that abandoned inner child and sort of taking it under your wing and really addressing its needs in a very substantial way.
Right. And you say that one of outer child's favorite ploys is to bury its head in the sand. And I'm looking at a chapter here on special applications for outer child and procrastination, because you also say procrastination is the most pervasive and insidious stumbling block to success. And there's a you share a couple of stories here. One person says, I could win a procrastination contest. Just give me a task and I'll find a way to put it off. I embarked on cleaning my apartment, which I'd put off for over 6 months, even though that person had a paper to finish over the weekend. It reminded me of when I was studying for my stockbroker's license, and I devoted the whole weekend, you know, freed up the whole weekend so I could do that. I spent the whole weekend cleaning and doing laundry. And then There's another story here, which I think, you know, many people might find themselves in because we're such a transient society today. This person says, my best friends moved away. Bottom line, I needed to make new friends, but instead of reaching out, I threw myself into my job. I had a two-week vacation coming up, nowhere to go anywhere. The sense of loneliness almost killed me. How had I let myself get so isolated? It's not like I didn't see it coming. So these are the kind of ways we can abandon ourselves.
Procrastination is very insidious because, of course, outer child rationalizes everything. So it can convince us to put something off until tomorrow using ingenious rationalization. It can say things like, yes, that we should write that paper, but you know, tomorrow we'll have a longer period of time. We'll really be able to do it in a more orderly manner if we wait until tomorrow. And then, of course, tomorrow comes, and tomorrow is outer child's favorite word, and it can be put off until Sunday and maybe even until Monday until the paper is late. So procrastination is the way that outer child gets away with doing the easy thing, doing what is more pleasurable or what reduces tension. Outer child is a pleasure seeker and will take the easy road every time.
Right.
So we can have an adult. The adult self can have every notion in the world that is healthy and right, but outer child is always fighting us to get more pleasure and less tension, and is always trying to win. And sometimes we're in control, and sometimes outer child is in control.
Right. You say it's possible that we unknowingly set ourselves up, our current life, to distract us from working on personal issues and goals. And of course, you know, working too much is one way of doing that. Ways we can get around that, you say it's important to keep our future vision in mind and remember your adult self is in charge. And you often refer to the adult self as the higher self.
Yes.
So how do we strengthen our higher self?
Well, ironically, we strengthen the higher self by being in very close contact with the inner child, with the emotional self. So it's head and heart. You hear people talk about the head-heart disconnect, and that's the problem, is that we become workaholic, or we become task monsters who just follow the next thing to do in life. That's all outer child behavior, too. But to actually have goals and work on them means that we have to know what is important and who is it important to. It's important to the self. It's not for people-pleasing or other people's expectations. It's what do I want and need and why? Why is it important? And to get that information, to get real true motivation, to be really goal-directed, you need to tune inward and discover what your inner child is concerned about, is worried about, wants, needs. That's the connection has to be made internally.
Right.
And that involves, again, it doesn't happen by osmosis. It involves following a program that actually guides you into that kind of a connection. But once that connection starts to work for you and you actually start to let your adult self take responsibility for meeting your emotional needs, your needs and wants of the inner child, so to speak. Once you do that, outer child really doesn't have much leeway there because you're having such a tight coalition and you're acting your feelings out in healthy ways by choice, not by knee-jerk reaction. Now you're starting to really achieve your goals.
And so when we are looking at our own inner child, outer child, excuse me, you list 250 outer child patterns in the book. Things like we talked about procrastination, avoidance, codependency, unrealistic expectations, narcissistic needs. There's 250 of them. How do we start paying attention to our own outer child? Because it's definitely there. I found mine very quickly.
Well, the quickest way to raise your consciousness about your outer child, there are a couple of ways. One is to read the book, obviously, because it's designed to help warm you up to the concept. And the other is to, on my website, I have a 250-item outer child inventory. You can read and it'll give you ideas. You can identify with some of the characteristics listed and maybe not all of them. I identify with all 250 of them. But you can do that to kind of warm you up. And you can also take a daily, add it to your journal, take a daily inventory of when you've noticed that you haven't acted in your own best interest. And it's interesting to use the journal because a lot of times you don't know until after the fact that something that you thought was well-intended was actually your outer child winning out because it convinced you somehow. For instance, it convinced you last night to have a second piece of cake, because if you have two, then today you'll really start your diet in earnest. That's what it tells you. It rationalized it. So the next morning, you can say, oh, I listened to my outer child again. And you can start to recognize those actions that you took the day before or that week that actually were not in your best interest.
Now, we're almost at the end of our segment, but I think this is really important because you say that self-abandonment is a severe enough trauma to implant a drain deep within us. So, and we have to deal with a primal wound. So tell us just a little about how we identify that primal wound.
Oh, yes. The invisible drain of self-esteem is always working to drain away our self-esteem no matter what we do, what esteemable things. It's always working because it's that primal abandonment wound. But the antidote is to abandon, to adopt ourselves, to adopt the abandoned inner child. The abandoned inner child is waiting on a street corner, lonely and scared, for us to pick it up and say, okay, I'm going to listen to you today, and I'm going to start to meet your needs, and I'm going to start to accomplish your goals.
And we heal from the inside out then, which is much more lasting, right?
Yes. Yeah, that internal connection that allows the healing from the inside out.
Well, it's fascinating work. I'm wondering, do you have an outer child yourself and and how you deal with that?
My outer child is most active at night when I'm tired. It really starts to get rip-roaring strong if I have even a half a glass of wine. Outer child says, I think I'm gaining control. I have to be on special lookout for myself if I dare to have a glass of wine or get tired. So I'm on special alert at night, but I most definitely have an outer child that I keep track of.
And when you're working with people, Susan, do you find that there's a more common outer child behavior?
Procrastination and avoidance and people pleasing. Those are three I find go
really
across the board.
So it's a very good clue there that if we are finding ourselves doing one of those three, we need to start paying attention to our outer child.
Yes, overeating, overshopping, over anything.
Right.
Underdoing it, being under, to being too passive, under or over, suspect outer child.
Well, it's really fascinating work, and I thank you for being with us today. I want to just make sure that people have your website, because I know you've got some great information up there. So can you please give us your website?
Yes, outerchild.net, and it'll tell you when the next workshop is. It's a great way to overcome your outer child, your self-sabotage.
Okay, great. And say that again, outerchild.net, right?
Outerchild.net.
Okay, yes. Super. Thank you very much.
Okay,
and thank you so much for being with us, Susan. Really appreciate it. And the name of the book, again, is Taming Your Outer Child, Overcoming Self-Sabotage and Healing from Abandonment. And my guest, of course, Susan Anderson. And, go check out the website because there's a ton of great information up there, including that 250 self-inventory list that Susan mentioned. And I think you'll find it really helpful. I know I did. All right, you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Please do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicki St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicki partners with people just like you at the exact level you need. Whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicki today. Email Vicki at VickiSt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicki and her work at VickiSt.Clair.com.
Do you love wildlife? Then make a real difference by helping PAWS care for sick and injured wild animals. Volunteers help feed and clean the animals until they are well enough to return to the wild. Sign up today and help save a wild life. No experience necessary. All training is provided. Visit PAWS.org or call 425-787-2500.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to the Northwest School of Animal Massage on Vashon Island, we cover the world of animals. This week, March 15th, it's Vet Sunday with Animal World's favorite vet, Dr. Bill Burlingame, in the studio. He's the most balanced and knowledgeable vet I know, and we'll have open phone lines throughout the show so you can call in and get his opinion or advice for free. On Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
I want to thank my mommy for loving me so much.
For taking me to the doctor when I broke my foot.
For leaving me alone when I wanted to be alone.
And now, as a grown-up, I'm thankful for being able to take care of you, my dear mom. For taking you to your therapies. For understanding that sometimes you simply want to be alone.
Roles change without us noticing. That's why AARP gives you the information to provide even better care for your loved one. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
If you'd like to advertise your business or service on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, or you'd like to become a program supporter by sponsoring one of our shows, please call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine a spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772 or email info@conversationslive.net.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Making a difference, one word at a time.
Going against the grain has never been so much fun. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
People will think I'm some kind of pervert. Adult sex, either boring or dirty. Young people, they can get...
Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And we are talking in this segment about the truth about food addiction. My guest is Dr. Vera Tarman. She's the medical director of Renaissance, an addiction treatment center in Toronto. She conducts workshops and speaking engagements on the science of food addiction and comfort food abuse, and writes for Recovery Wire magazine. She's also a regular guest on Living Clean, Living Well on Yes TV, which is Canada's only live or interactive television show that deals with addiction and substance abuse issues. And the name of the book is Food Junkies, The Truth About Food Addiction. Dr. Tarman, welcome to the show.
Oh, hi, Vic. I'm really happy to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you. And as I said at the top of the hour, both of my guests today said they found the missing piece of the puzzle in their respective fields. And so I think this is great work that you're doing. And I should give a big shout out, of course, here to Philip Wardell, who is your co-author on this. You work with Philip, I understand.
Not directly clinically, but we work together in this field of food addiction. He does a lot of the educational pieces in the States, and I do them up here and elsewhere, wherever I can.
And so what I think is so beneficial here is that both of you have been food addicts. Phil, in his bio, says he's a recovering food addict, social clinician, and educator. I mean, a lot of really great experience here as director of ACORN's professional training program. He teaches addiction studies at the Springfield College School of Human Services in Florida. And, of course, you know, all the work you do and have been doing for many, many years on this. And you've had your own personal struggle. So let's kick off with, you know, what you went through. Because you were at college when when I believe you started realizing you had a problem.
Yes. Yeah. So, I can start with that. It was in my mid-20s that I actually, before I went into university, was, drinking a lot and things of that nature. And when I got into university and saw that I couldn't, live that kind of lifestyle anymore, I sort of stopped cold turkey. And what ended up happening was, unlike some people who will say that they remember having an unusual relationship with food, like right from the get-go when they were young, they remember, you know, going down into the cabinet and picking out on all the cookies. That didn't really happen to me until after, in my mid-20s. And, you know, I was, of course, horrified by all the weight gain that happened because I wasn't one of those people who could get away with it. And so I kept struggling and stopping and starting and stopping, and it just got worse and worse and worse. And at that time, which was in the 70s, I actually did try to seek out help with a psychiatrist. And, this was just around the time when eating disorders were becoming acknowledged, you know, entities, clinical entities. And I think I got labeled bulimic because I was fulfilling those criteria. I didn't seek out help. I tried to do it my own way. Should I keep going or do you want to ask me something else?
Well, no, I just wanted listeners to know you've had your own struggles with this. So, I mean, this is great. So you,
Let me just give you the aha moment. Because it was that kind of engined my, or fueled my engine towards writing the book and getting on a campaign about this. I kind of discovered early on that if I didn't eat the triggered foods, which was, sweets and goopy, fatty stuff, after a couple of weeks, I was fine and I didn't want them. But I kept getting seduced back into that thinking pattern of, well, I can just have a little bit, you know, now that I'm okay, I'm just going to do it on Saturdays or something like that.
Hello? Oh, we lost our guest. We're having technical difficulties. All right. Well, we might as well, we'll take a break because we need to take one in a couple of minutes anyway. So let's go early to break and we'll see if we can get Dr. Vera Tarman back on the phone. Her book is called Food Junkies, The Truth About Food Addiction. So please stay with us. We will be right back.
If you love dogs, tune in to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes live every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. We'll talk about everything dog and interview authors, experts, and amazing organizations, both locally and nationally. And don't even get me started on the pet food industry. I'm Julie Forbes. Find us online at www.dogradioshow.com and also as a free podcast on iTunes. The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Sasha Martin's one goal when she set out to write Life from Scratch was to chronicle her adventure of eating a meal from every country in the world with her picky husband and baby girl. Vicki also talks with CNN anchor Nicole Lappin, who says if you're working, paying bills, and shopping, you're a CEO of your own financial department, and her new book empowers you to take control of your life. Keep up with show news on Facebook and Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And be sure and tune in every Monday at noon.
If you'd like to advertise your business or service on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, or you'd like to become a program supporter by sponsoring one of our shows, please call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine a spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772 or email info@conversationslive.net.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
The search is over. You found the station that's not afraid to be different. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. Well, we do have our guests back with us. Technical difficulties. We are live. These things happen. So we're talking about food junkies. We're talking about the truth about food addiction. And as I mentioned, both writers of this book have had their own struggles with food and they've spent their careers devoted to helping others. But Dr. Vera Tarman is with me now. She's a medical practitioner and she specializes in addiction medicine. She was sharing before we went to break how she had her own struggles. And if we can just finish up quickly with your aha moment, Dr. Tarman, and then we'll get into some of the messaging in the book here.
Okay, sure. So what happened is when I got into my addiction field, it just clued in one day, why don't I treat this whole process as if I'm taking a drug rather than just a normal food that everybody else can handle? And when I did that, and it sort of applied this abstinence principle of just don't eat the trigger food, it made the whole difference in the world. And I can now say I'm a recovered rather than struggling food addict.
Right.
Yeah.
Powerful aha moment for you. So the message in your book, you say, is simple. If you see yourself as a food addict, you must treat those trigger foods as a drug. So I want to, before we get into the science of it, I want to look at what's the difference between addiction, compulsion when it comes to eating, and disorder. How do you define addiction?
Well, okay, so addiction really is, because we don't actually use like PET scans and you know, blood work to determine what addiction is. It's really based on a history of, do you fulfill particular criteria based on questions that I would ask the person. And so a person who has a problem with eating can usually at some point, they have a stop switch. Like they might be overeating because our foods are engineered to be very addictive. That doesn't mean that if you eat a few too many chips, you're a food addict. Absolutely not. But if you find that you fulfill particular criteria where essentially the stop switch doesn't seem to be working, that's when it's beginning to look like an addiction. And some of those criteria, I mean, probably the basic one is, are you obsessed about food? And for example, even as you're eating one meal, you're already thinking, what am I going to have later on? And what am I going to do in between? Because, oh, my God, dinner's almost over. And how will I get through the next without eating? But there becomes this real focus and dependency on just the fact of the food itself.
Okay.
Yeah. And you might start displaying behavior like eating by yourself because you don't want other people to see how you're eating. Denying that you're eating as much as you are, lying about it, all those kind of behaviors that we see with typical drug use.
Okay, makes sense. So I want to talk about some of the science behind this, because I think this is it was quite eye-opening, really. Just as an example, and then I'll let you talk about this. But you say in the book, sugar has the same neurochemistry and neural pathways as cocaine. Sweetened chocolate mimics the effects of alcohol and opiates. Flour modulates moods and anesthetizes pain, just as many drugs do. And dopamine has a part in all of this. So talk to us about how this works, how this affects our brain, and how it fuels that addiction.
Oh, yeah. So what we've actually found through bits and pieces of science is a picture that, we're really at a preliminary stage with the research, but there's a lot of indications that this is an addiction, and it fits the theory and the science that we have really fits the picture. So basically, what happens is that a particular drug like cocaine or alcohol sort of hijacks our reward pathway, our motivational pathway. You know, I'm not only going to do something if it makes me feel good or it's useful. And food is like, our reward pathway is built for food because that's what we're supposed to eat to stay alive, right?
Right.
When you get anything that either behavior or a substance that gives you more reward, in other words, that euphoric punch, than you're supposed to have, it's going to become compelling. And the more you pile onto that reward, it's going to become so compelling that your natural ability to say, no, I've actually had enough, gets overpowered. So a food addict actually doesn't want to eat anymore. Like, they're full, but they still want to eat. It's like the want switch doesn't close. And that want switch, I want, that's
right.
Dopamine.
Right.
And the pleasure, the kind of gluttonous feeling after a big tub of Haagen-Dazs, that's probably serotonin and endorphin. You know, it's the same thing. It triggers the same pathway as drugs do. And it's not just, it's when you have a lot and fast. So, you know, a food addict is eating quickly and they're eating a lot. It's not just, you know, a couple of chocolate bars and that's it.
Okay.
You know, it's like, yeah.
Right. So I wanted to talk a little about, I hate to use Oprah here, but you used her as an example in the book here. But,
yeah.
But I can kind of relate on some level. I think I mentioned this in a previous show. She said with her weight issues that her life was out of balance. She had too much work, not enough play. She said, I don't have, and then after many years of therapy, she came to the conclusion, I don't have a weight problem, I have a self-care problem. My first guest might have said she had a self-abandonment problem. You say that you think she probably has a food addiction based on previous history.
Okay, so, you know, when it gets down to it, the thing about food addiction is it looks an awful lot like an eating disorder or just somebody who's, you know, like Oprah described, has a life balancing problem. And ultimately, the way you determine it is what is successful. So if you, you know, if you hire a coach or you go to Weight Watchers and it works, then great, then you're not a food addict. But a food addict can have the best therapy, the best sleep, the best medications, the best whatever. But if they eat a little bit of their trigger food, they're off and running again, regardless of self-care. So it ultimately, you know, what is it that works will almost help to decide what the actual condition is. Okay. And, I mean, what we see with Oprah is it's a constant cycling process, and it makes me think, Oprah, let's just give 3 months. Let's just give this a try and see if this makes a difference.
The one thing that struck me in here, and maybe I thought this was a good thing that you shared in the book, that you said, as knowledgeable as I am about this, because you've worked in this for decades now, it still perplexes me that I can still succumb.
That's you know, part of that is the whole fundamental phenomena of addiction is, first of all, chronic, it never goes away. You can step away from it if you step away from the trigger food. And what happened is I stumbled onto, you're talking about my epilogue, when I found my nut butter fascination. And I hadn't actually had that experience before. And when I tasted it, it was like, oh, I know this feeling. Oh, no. But once you get hooked in, it's, you know, denial is a cardinal feature of addiction. And I knew, because I know the criteria. I knew what was happening. But it took literally a year to get out of the grips of that. And one of the fundamental messages that we say in addiction is you can't do this alone because your brain will talk you out of what the problem is.
Right. You say that whether the user favors Jack Daniels or Jack in the Box, the brain's going to talk you out of it. But you say there is hope, so... let's talk about that, about how we, if we recognize we do have an addiction, you know, I'm not addicted to the point where I just can't stop eating sugar, but I definitely see the more I have, the more I want. So it makes perfect sense to me.
That's right.
There's definitely that craving. And when I don't have it and I cut it out completely, I just don't want it. And my body doesn't want it and it doesn't like it.
Exactly.
How do we start to get a grip on this if we realize, you know, hey, we might be heading down that road?
Yeah. So, I mean, really, like a really good analogy is just, you know, is the stop switch still working or is it getting faulty? So it sounds like it's still working in your situation. But when it's not, or, you know, even if you just want to try for 3 months and see how life feels like. But, you know, the message of hope is if you come to that place, which we in addiction treatment programs, when we use 12 steps, say that's step one. I accept that I'm powerless over food. Whatever, you just accept that you're going to try for 3 months not to eat the substance because it will trigger what we call a phenomenon of craving. If you can do that, get through the month of withdrawal, because there is withdrawal, and the primary one is going to be craving. You're going to want it a lot. The good news is it's not like you're spending the rest of your life wanting sweets. Like, I mean, I don't know if you came to a place when you stopped or cut down that it didn't even appeal to you anymore.
Right.
So if you can get to that place and then hold on to not picking it up again, I mean, it's actually a freeing experience. Like, you're liberated from that grip of waking up in the morning going, oh, what am I going to eat today? And how am I going to cope with how I feel today based on what I, you know, that whole endless, relentless wanting and feeling awful about yourself. Mm. That will end.
Well, I you know what I do is a very simple trick for me that works is when I realize I'm eating too much sugar, which I've just been through a few months of that because I was off it totally. I drink, when I wake up, I drink hot water and lemon, and I just put, half a lemon in there. And then I find I lose that sweet craving, and it just tastes horrible then when you do eat something that's very sweet.
Exactly, yeah. And so there are a lot of people, and here's a message of hope too, there are a lot of people who have come across to the other side, have found support, like I needed to find support. Part of the support was the science to prove that this really was a condition, so that I didn't get edged and talked back into using that substance. Because then it's a constant battle. Should I? Shouldn't I? Just think about people who have quit smoking. Mm-hmm. Once you quit, if you want to quit, you don't pick up and have a cigarette on the weekend. But you know you're probably going to start again eventually. And we support people who quit smoking. We don't say, hey, good for you, have a smoke. And similarly, we should start doing that for people who have quit eating sugar or whatever the addictive foods are.
Right. So in the first segment today, we talked a lot about self-sabotage. So let's talk about your chapter in the book called The Great Saboteur. And you say you are not a proponent of, many people who write diet books and profess to help people with do help people with weight issues and food issues. Tell them just to learn to eat in moderation, exercise properly. You say that doesn't work for food addicts.
No, it doesn't work for food addicts. If it does work, then that means that the person is not a food addict. And, I can use a good analogy. For people who are heavy drinkers, a moderate drinking plan, they go to the doctor says, hey, listen, you're drinking more than four, glasses of whatever a day, that's a problem. Let's get you down to two or three a day, and generally speaking, your health will improve. It certainly won't get worse. And if the person can do that, great. But the alcoholic can't do that because the moment they cut down, it's like you just turn on that itch that, you start scratching, and then you just want to scratch even more. It sparks the phenomenon of craving. And this is the reason why when people don't acknowledge this condition of food addiction and say, so what? Let's just call it binge eating disorder or bulimia. Attached to those programs are usually modified eating plans. And inevitably what happens is if the person gets better and then starts to try to eat moderately, a little bit of dessert on the weekend, and they're back and running again.
Right, right.
It just doesn't work.
So we only have 60 seconds left here, Dr. Tarman, but I just want to squeeze this in really, really quickly because I do think it's important. And that is switching addictions. When we're treating an addiction of any kind, we have to deal with much more than just, stopping certain foods. I know several people who've had gastric bypass, lost 100 pounds or more. And then, several years back, they've either become alcoholics or they've gained it all back or they just switched to the addiction. So it's important that we look at what's going on emotionally. What do you have to say on that? We've got about 30 seconds left now.
Well, it's actually not just emotional. It's actually what's happening is the neurochemistry is still being fired up. It's not food, it's alcohol or smoking cigarettes or something else. Like, as long as that addiction loop is propelled along, it doesn't really matter what the substance is, and you're going to be likely to relapse back on your chosen drug, whatever that is.
Well, I thank you so much for being with us today. And can you please give our listeners your website so they can find out more information about the book and the information that you're working on? This book is really well researched. There are a ton of examples in here of people who've had food addictions and how they've worked to overcome them. So would you please share your website with us, Dr. Tarman?
I will, Vicky, and thank you so much for asking me to come and speak. My website is called addictionunplugged.com.
Okay, addictionunplugged.com. My guest, Dr. Vera Tarman, and she wrote this book with a colleague, Philip Waddell. Both of them have dealt with food addiction themselves and are pioneering the way in the truth about food addiction. Food Junkies is the book. Thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And I appreciate you all spending this hour with us. Both of these books, I think, are excellent. And if you have issues where you're self-sabotaging, or you think you might be addicted to foods, I think, definitely check out these books. And we will be back next week with an all-life news show. Until then, you know where to reach me. I'm at 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617. Or you can email me at info@conversationslive.net, conversationslive.net. And what else? Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair and on Facebook at Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. So until next week, live well, live strong. Thanks for spending this hour with us. Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.